And good morning to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and I gotta tell you, I'm looking forward to being back in the saddle with you this morning. A fun, diverse topic, Monday morning news hour this morning here on the program, where we try to get into the week by talking about some of the things that came in since we left the studio on Friday. What came in over the weekend that is interesting, what shapes the week ahead, and what's on my mind certainly, and what's on your mind as well. We try to ease into the flow of the week here, talking about some things in the news that are interesting. And of course, it's you and me today for today. We often have local news reporters and journalists and folks who are actively looking at the issues and reporting on them. Often we'll have them in studio to run through some things. But today it's you and me, and I want to invite you to join in on the conversation. 520-790-2040. What's on your mind today? I have a number of things on my list, but feel free to call in, jump in at any time. I'll also track the inbox as we go along. If you'd prefer to email, zyenser@gmail.com. is my email that I track during the show as well. Here in a minute, I want to talk about three things that crossed my mind as interesting here coming out of the weekend into the week. I want to talk about the climate conference that just wrapped up in Glasgow, Scotland. I can't say Glasgow without easing into an accent, but I think I did it twice okay this morning. A couple of things interesting to me about COP26. I also want to talk about the redistricting of House races and House districts across this country, a concerning number. And by the way, two of the three things that I want to just talk about to kick us off here are going to be numbers-based. I also got some clarification on the vaccine mandate out of Pima County, what it is and what it isn't. And I want to share it with you because I think it's interesting. It shows one of three approaches to vaccine mandates in Pima County. We'll talk about my clarification on Pima County, the jurisdictions, the Board of Supervisors, their vaccine mandate. And then probably in the second half, I want to talk about what I continue to see, and this is my clarion call. I'm going to become more firm about it, not as an R or a D, but as a nonpartisan citizen looking at the issues. There's a stunning lack of urgency on a variety of issues in Pima County's largest jurisdiction. And I think if we care about the region, if we care about the region's largest municipality, it's worth talking about, certainly in light of some news that came in over the weekend. That's our Monday morning news hour. Again, join me 520-790-2040. I always like to start the week too by saying hello to my good friend and the guy who makes the magic happen every morning here, every drive time morning show of Tipping Point here on AM 1030 KVY The Voice. Matt, happy Monday to you. It's been a couple of days. Good to see you.
Good morning, Zach. It was a good weekend, and here we are. But nice fall weather and beautiful week ahead for us.
Absolutely. And, you know, November is when things really ramp up in Tucson. I didn't go, but there's a big music festival. Of course, the last U of A home game. We're looking at street fairs coming up. November is when it really starts to get fun in Tucson for 4, 5, 6 months. And you can feel it in the air, chill.
And ice skating downtown. In the air. Ice skating downtown, too, right?
That's right. It's coming back. Coming back, it's a good time to be in Tucson. So I wanted to start off with a few things that stood out to me, very few things, very surface level, but stood out to me about this global climate conference that just wrapped up in Glasgow, Scotland. COP26 is what it's called, and there's something that stood out to me. By and large, I think it was a lot of performance, and of course, these are some of the world's major nations coming together to talk about when are the deadlines we need to be looking at, what is the timeline around climate change, and what do we do about it? And my gut feeling as I've tracked it over the last couple of weeks is that it was largely performance. It was largely ritualistic. We come together, we talk about it. We don't really come away with anything but Band-Aids and simple fixes. A few numbers that stood out to me, and this hasn't been talked about enough, but the Washington Post covered it, and I'm glad that they did. Dan Crenshaw, Republican from Texas, is probably the most notable Republican who said, I'm going to go to COP26, but there was actually a number of Republicans, Representative Garrett Graves from Louisiana, Representative John Curtis from Utah, Representative David McKinley from West Virginia, and others, Representative Westerman from Arkansas, and the list goes on. It was a handful, funded by a couple of outside conservative groups. Citizens for Responsible Energy Solutions and Clear Path covered a handful of Republican House members to go to COP26. And so this is the first number that's interesting. A recent Pew Research Center survey found that more than half of Republican voters say they would support a range of programs to combat climate change, including tree planting efforts and tougher emission standards for cars. So this delegation is going out of this result that Republican voters care about climate change. And the GOP has realized that it needs to, as the Washington Post would say, quote, carve out credibility on the issue, that conservatives have ideas on climate change. Those ideas are often not at the table, and it's time for them to be at the table. But that's the first number that stood out to me. It's what I think was mostly a waste of time. In light of some of the big goals that the world supposedly came in to figure out at COP26, it feels like very Band-Aid solutions came out of it. But over half of Republican voters are saying, hey, we may not agree on the answers, but we certainly agree on the problem. And we are expecting our party to look into this issue. So that's important number one. I'll go to break on this. One of the things that Republicans went to talk about is that, look, if we're going to, as the United States, be back in and be all in to the Paris Agreement, we have to be asking more from China. We have to have a more ambitious commitment from China. This is one of a few things that Republicans are saying, look, we got to have it. And here's the number why. And here's why I think, by and large, COP26 will be looked at as a disappointment. Up until the very last 48 to 72 hours, there was a global agreement to look at, and here's the wording, phasing down unabated coal. Phasing down the use of unabated coal. We're going to phase out the use of unabated coal. At the last minute, a few countries came in, namely China and India, and said, we don't like that word. We don't want to phase out. We can't phase out. We are in a period of economic growth. Rural areas don't have electricity even at this point in our countries. We are developing still in many ways. We don't want to phase out. We would rather phase down over a period of time. And I don't know how much those phrases have been talked about in the, when I say mainstream media, I don't mean that in terms of MSM. I mean in terms of the everyday news that folks watch. I don't know if that was caught, but there was this shift at the very, very end of the conference from a phase out goal to a phase down goal. And here's why I think Republicans are right. Right to ask that the global community, that the United States' participation is based on a more ambitious commitment from China. Get a load of this number, and I'm late, I know. I'll get out of here in a second. China in 2020, get this, Matt, it's crazy. China was responsible for 54% of global coal consumption. India, 11.6%, between 11 and 12%. Those two countries together, the countries that said, look, we don't want to phase out, we want to phase down over a longer period of time, which, by the way, science does point to a longer window than the crisis-driven language we use. It doesn't mean we don't do anything. It doesn't mean that we don't need to do anything. 50% plus of Republican voters agree that we need to be doing stuff and that humans have an impact on climate change. But science points to a longer timeline, a longer window, an ability to potentially phase down versus just an immediate short-term phase out. But the two players that said let's phase it down, not out, are responsible for over two-thirds of global coal consumption. Here's the number that's equally frustrating. The United States consumes 6.1% of the world's global coal consumption. This a review by BP's 2021 World Energy Statistical Review. So I think when you come out of a conference where band-aids were applied, where ritualistic handshaking was agreed on, but where the two major players that are involved in the largest contributor to climate change represent two-thirds of global coal consumption, come in at the last minute and change language from phase out to phase down, I think you got a problem. So some interesting numbers. Again, 50% plus of Republican voters care about climate change and say they'd support a range of programs to combat it. We are talking certainly about what the U.S. can do more. We consume 6.1% of coal usage. I don't know how much needle moving happens when two countries use two-thirds of global coal consumption. Those players have to come to the table in a bigger way. Until then, COP26 is a photo op. In my mind, it's deeper than that. It's more nuanced than that. But by and large, wrapped up this weekend on Saturday, that's what's happened. I thought it was interesting. When we come back, I want to talk about what I see as the biggest challenge to democracy. Not wearing team blue, not wearing team red, but I want to give you some numbers as census has driven a redistricting process in our states, as it does every 10 years. There's some scary numbers. I don't think our democracy gets healthier from here. Also want to clarify Pima County's, the jurisdiction's vaccine mandates, some interesting stuff there. Then I want to talk about a stunning lack of urgency on three things in our community, probably the second half of the show. Let's go to our first break of the hour. When we come back, more from me on this Monday morning news hour on Tipping Point. We'll take your calls on the other side, 520-790-2040.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at storytellerpr.com to learn more. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and schedule time with Devin and her team.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk, or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at Mass Mutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
Hi, this is Tom Sullivan. Join me weeknights from 7 to 10 for the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you again, live here out of the Common Workspace Studios. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. It's a call-in Monday morning news hour here on the show. You and me on the air talking about the issues that certainly are on my mind, but I want to hear yours, of course. 520-790-2040. Three news items that came in over the weekend that I found interesting. I'm sharing them with you here for the first half hour. And then I want to talk about what I see, and it'll be news and data oriented. A stunning lack of urgency on three key topics, certainly, and I say this as a passionate, nonpartisan, bipartisan citizen of the largest municipality in Pima County, the city of Tucson. I think there's three areas that have a stunning lack of urgency around them that are vitally important to the city and to the region. So I want to talk about that as well. We open up the first segment talking about COP26, a global climate forum, a place where agreements were supposed to happen. In my mind, Band-Aids happened, but not the real work. And the real work is something that is a reason why I think there was a Republican congressional delegation that went to Glasgow, Scotland for COP26, supported by a recent Pew Research Center survey that found that more than half of Republicans said they would support a range of programs to combat climate change, including tree planting efforts and tougher emissions standards for cars and more. And we talked about how the Republican delegation certainly is calling for China and India to step up and do more work, which makes sense considering China is responsible for 54% of global coal consumption in 2020. If that needle isn't moved, no needle gets moved, no matter what global heavyweights do what. So a big topic there. I want to continue on. Here's a couple other numbers that are really concerning to me. Competition, as we're looking at redistricting across the country, a process that happens every 10 years after the census comes out each time. And there's a handful of states who have an independent redistricting commission or some other group besides state legislators who manage this. Of course, there's a lot of states where the state legislatures do manage redistricting, and then you get into these conversations of gerrymandering or of basically, they call it cracking or packing, basically, and Democrats do this and Republicans do it. Republicans do this a little bit more because they just have more control over more state legislatures. It's a math thing. But basically, both parties have an interest in carving out seats that are not competitive, that are reliably Democrat or reliably Republican. Words are hard on a Monday. They always are. In 2020, the New York Times said that just 61 of the 435 House elections are battleground districts, meaning that that the other, whatever that number is, I've stopped doing math on the air because I get in trouble every time, but the other high 300 number are reliably D or reliably R. The New York Times looked at places like Texas, where there were 14 congressional districts in 2020 that had a presidential vote that was separated by 10 percentage points or less. With the state's new maps this year, again, post-census, only three, not 14, only three are projected to be decided by a similar margin. Now again, Democrats and Republicans both have the same interest. Republicans get to do it more because they control more state legislatures around the country. I think we forget that a lot of governor seats and state legislatures are still Republican controlled across the country. Now, I want to say this. What I'm going to say for the next 4 or 5 minutes does not come from wearing Team Blue or Team Red. It is truly, and I know this is going to sound hokey, but I mean it when I say it, Team American. And here's why I say that. Look, if you are a Democrat, I know you love when your party's in power. And if you're a Republican listening, you love it when your party is in power. I don't know too many people who are thoroughly enjoying right now the absolute beating That our parties give each other. I don't know anyone that is enjoying the 24-hour news coverage, that is enjoying the inability to get things done, that is enjoying the constant in-the-trenches warfare where no compromise happens, where nothing really solid comes out legislatively, where there is this constant every two-year cycle is what party can just squeak out a few extra votes by being as extreme as possible to rally its base as well as possible, to be as loud and as angry and as violent as possible, to squeak out a few extra votes and capitalize on a few big talking points, to get just a few of the more purple of the other side of the spectrum to kind of swing your way in a pendulum way every single election. If you like how that works, if you like how that feels, then maybe you turn off the radio for three more minutes until we go to the bottom of the hour break. But my hunch is most of you listening, even if you like when your team wins, are tired of it. And we know by the growing number of registered independent voters that a lot of the country is tired of it. Let me tell you this. When competition in local races goes down and state races go down, when these battleground contests, when there has to be actual ideas and actual policy and actually talking to people who are outside of your bubble, when the need for that goes down, what we see today only gets worse. In 5 years, we will look back and say this was a calm, pleasant, polite moment in American political life. Because the trend that this is going, where only 61 of 435 House elections are in any way competitive and contested, creates more of what we see today. And I'll tell you this, my personal opinion is I think the only way we get out of this is election reform. The only way we get out of this is statewide and local constitutional and charter change to change how we elect people away from a primary system. That's it. I mean, there's no turning back from this. When you create a system where elections are won in the primary, American democracy and American health suffers. Party health may not, but American political health suffers. And I don't know, speaking for myself, personal health suffers. I'm getting tired of it. I'm too young to be this old. I tell people that all the time, too young to be this old. The only way is figuring out different ways, whether it is open primaries, whether it is nonpartisan elections, whether it is jungle primaries, whether it is ranked choice voting. I don't know, listening, what you think of those things today. I'm telling you, those are the only way out of this mess. We're too far gone. We're too far gone. When only 61 of 435 House elections are in any way competitive, we're done. Political conversation doesn't matter anymore. You run as an R in an R district, you run as a D in a district, you get elected. That's it. Then you just hammer each other over the head for 2 to 4 years. It's done. When we come back, one last news item. Then I want to talk about a few key issues in the city of Tucson this Monday morning news hour on 1030 The Voice. Tipping Point returns in just a moment. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson, located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater. Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. Welcome live here out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVY, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. If you just joined us, happy Monday to you. Good morning. This is our Monday morning news hour where we try to get you eased into the week by talking about what I think are some of the big issues that happened since we left the studio and are shaping the week ahead. We're talking about it here. We're talking about it here with you. I wanted to share that one of the things I love about doing live local radio is that we get to have real-time talk about real issues with real people. And there is just no other platform. I don't care whether it's podcasts or newspaper or a Facebook Live. There are very few, if any, other platforms of community dialogue where you and I get to have a real-time conversation as real people about real issues every single day. That's why I do this thing called Live Local Radio. So that's my invitation. Give us a call, 520-790-2040. It can be a comment on something that I've talked about. It can be a comment on something I haven't talked about that you think is important that should have been covered on shows like today. So give us a call, 520-790-2040. Before I get back into it, this segment is sponsored by Little Love Burger, opening downtown last month on October 20th. Little Love Burger is serving up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. You can follow them on social at Little Love Burger, but of course do more than just follow them on social. Go in and have some of that great food and drink and what they're providing. A great team of local Tucsonans who are starting a business in Tucson in these times. They deserve our support. Great community people down there, just a few doors down from the Rialto, downtown Tucson. All right, at Little Love Burger. All right, if you just joined us, check out the podcast from the first half. I don't want to repeat it all because it was a lot and it was fun, but check it out on the podcast, iTunes, Google Music, and Spotify, as well as our website, kvy.com/podcasts. Look, you know, as President Biden begins a virtual summit with China tonight, I think it's interesting that we came off of a weekend. I reported, or I shared about this in the first segment, where China is responsible for about 54.3% of global coal consumption and was a huge player in changing what was nearly a global agreement to phase out unabated coal. China and India were able to shift that language to being phased down. We talked about how over 50% of Republican voters say they would support a range of programs to combat climate change, sending a delegation of House representatives from around the country, Republicans, to Glasgow, Scotland to be at the table. We also talked about my concerns that competition in House races around this country have decreased for years as we watch the redistricting process post U.S. Census every 10 years. Last year, and I think it's going to get worse, last year, just 61 of the 435 House elections in this country were considered battleground or competitive contests, and that number is going down. That is a danger to the health of our American democracy. I don't want to use crisis-loaded words, but if we continue down this path, I don't know how much longer this democracy can last doing what it is doing today. And I think the only way we get out of it is some serious election reform around what I would consider to be ranked choice voting or jungle primaries or nonpartisan elections. That's the kind of reform I'm talking about. I think that's the way to do it. And otherwise, this is just going to get worse. And if you think we're polarized today, I guarantee you in a few years from now, we're going to look back and go, this was a polite moment in American history. If you can believe that, it gets worse from here. So I think this deserves serious look. And for me, it's numbers-based. It's not politically based. It's numbers-based. So 61 of the 435 House elections last year were competitive contests, were battleground contests. All right, one last local newsy thing. What was interesting is... I had a conversation with Supervisor Steve Christie last week. Check that out on the podcast, where we talked about Pima County's COVID-19 vaccine mandates. And upon a little bit more research, I realized that some clarification, I believe, needs to be done on that. My understanding is that the vaccine mandate that the Pima County Board of Supervisors passed. What is it now, a week and a half ago at this point, was not a requirement for all employees to be vaccinated against COVID-19. It is those who work with vulnerable populations would be required to be vaccinated. These would be county health workers, any county employee who works with vulnerable children or the elderly, and any employee who works in the Pima County Adult Detention Complex or in the Juvenile Detention Center. My understanding, and I'll keep looking at this, my understanding is that this does not include deputies. And I thought it was worth mentioning because our conversation with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie focused on what would be the challenges to law enforcement at the county level. So we're talking Pima County Sheriff deputies of this vaccine requirement. My understanding is that deputies are exempt. That the option voted on by the Pima County Board of Supervisors was around the criteria that I just mentioned. I think it's important. Because those are important details. I also think it's interesting because there's now, I think, three layers that I can see within the area we call Pima County that have three different vaccine mandate policies. And here they are. Of course, we know that surrounding municipalities, to my knowledge, surrounding the city of Tucson in Pima County have elected, or many of them have elected, not to do vaccine mandates. I'll get a tally of that. If I'm wrong, I will correct that record. But I don't know of, you know, the Moranas and Oro Valleys and Sahuaritas of the world in Pima County. I haven't heard a vaccine mandate. If one has been put in place since I last checked, I will again correct that record. But there's one policy. We're just not going to do it. Number two is what we saw the city of Tucson, and very early on, where the city of Tucson made this an across the board. No exceptions, this department this way and this department this way, but not parts of this department. It was an across the board, you will be vaccinated. And I've spoken on this show about what I think are some of the pragmatic challenges this community is about to face because of that. The third policy way now that we're seeing is out of Pima County, the Board of Supervisors, the jurisdiction, where there is, instead of all employees being required to be vaccinated, at least current ones, there is a vulnerable population only requirement. And it's kind of the middle approach, right? Between not at all and everybody, it's kind of in the middle. And it's been interesting to watch Pima County take a much slower approach to a vaccine requirement than the city of Tucson. So anyway, again, my conversation with Supervisor Christie revolved around a lot of requirements for law enforcement. My understanding is it's more nuanced than that. I think it's an important detail. And again, I'll keep fact checking. I'll keep looking. I think facts matter. I think nuance matters. I think issues matter. I want to make sure it's gotten right on this show by me and anybody else. And so I wanted to put that on the record, as they say. Three different policy paths. We'll see which ends up to be most effective. I'm sure listening right now, you have your hunch, as do I. We'll see what happens. Matt, I want to go to an early break on that note, if we can. I want to talk about a few issues that are continually on my mind within the city of Tucson specifically. It'll be our way to end this Monday morning news hour here on Tipping Point on AM 1030 KVUI The Voice. If you have any calls, don't sit on your phone. Get your thumbs out. Give us a call, 520-790-2040. We're almost done here. One more segment. We'll be right back.
From Oro Valley to Vail and everywhere in between, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more. Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Helping you make better money decisions is what the Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning again to you. And for the last time here, our final segment of this Drive Time Hour of Tipping Point on AM 1030 KVUI, The Voice, where we talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. A couple of news items came in over the weekend since we left studio that bring to mind again to me what I see as a stunning lack of urgency on a few key topics that I think we absolutely have to get right, certainly within the city of Tucson. I think every jurisdiction listening, I know so many of you listening are listening from Sahuarita and Vail and Oro Valley and Marana and really everywhere in our region. And so we keep this show as regional as we can. But I'll be speaking specifically to the jurisdiction I live in, the city of Tucson, the largest one here in Pima County. Again, if you just joined us, I gave you my debrief of the climate conference in Glasgow, Scotland, the last couple weeks, ended Saturday. Check that out, COP26. I talked about what I see as a concerning moment for American democracy. It's a number-based concern around the redistricting that we're seeing around the country, where fewer and fewer House contests are in any way competitive. Everything is decided in the primary. Everything is based around a purity test for each party, and so we just get two parties that are almost equal that just whack each other over the head for 2 years and don't get much of anything important done for you and me. I don't see it getting better. I see it getting worse. I also clarified in the last segment an interesting nuance on the decision that the Pima County Board of Supervisors made around a vaccine mandate in areas under their jurisdiction. So check that out on the podcast. Look, I don't think I had a chance to mention this. I had a bit of a concern last week And it was magnified over the weekend as some troubling numbers, of course, continue to come in. I was triggered to think about this, and that's probably not the right use of the word, but what made me think about this kind of line of conversation in the last few minutes we had together is, of course, that I believe it's up to 88 now homicides in the city of Tucson. It is far and away above what we saw last year in 2020, which was across the country a devastating year of homicides. A record-breaking sweep of homicides swept this country, and in 2021, the city of Tucson has flown past that number, has flown past its last record year, and I think is going to cross 100 homicides by the end of this year. We're at 88 now. We had four come in over the weekend. I mean, it just is not slowing down. It's getting faster and faster. Compound this with a decision that I expressed a lot of concern about as a citizen last week, which was the reopening up, the reexamination of an ordinance that was passed just 2 weeks ago by Tucson City Council around accessory dwelling units. This is an issue that took a year of what I think was great public process to get where we were. Many, many public meetings. Planning Commission heard the issue twice. They forwarded their ideal ordinance over to Mayor and Council. Mayor and Council played with it a bit and ultimately passed something in mid-October to allow Tucson residents to build or to bring online legally accessory dwelling units. Now, I've been very clear that this is not the silver bullet. I think we're going to see a few hundred at most in the very near future accessory dwelling units being built. It's not going to solve the problem. It's not going to be at scale, but it's an important tool of many in the toolbox. And not only was I concerned about the taking a year of public process and at will reopening it and re-examining it a handful of days and weeks after. I think it is a troubling example of governance in this community. I think you can see a direct line, whether or not you like the decision or not, from the duck pond. I think it is troubling when a governing body feels the luxury and ability to at will unpack, unwind, undo things that had a public process behind them. I think you improve the public process, you stick with what you passed, you create faith in your government by doing what you said you would do, to whom you said you would do it, when you said you would do it. And I think there's a troubling precedent being sent, being said around an issue that I think is a small piece of the pie. And so whether it is the glaring error in local governance, or it is the fact that we are spending a year plus on a very, very micro piece of a broader housing challenge in our community, whether it is the sweeping homicide rate in this community, and of course you know where I stand on jobs as well, I think we are seeing, I think, three pillars of this community, housing, jobs, and public safety, see a stunning lack of urgency to do something substantive about it. And look, I know the challenge when I say things like that is that all seven of our council and all but one of our board of supervisors are Democrats. And I think the difficulty is that anyone who says, wait a second, there's a stunning lack of urgency, is automatically painted as a partisan statement because of the governing bodies who are in charge of the decisions. And I want to tell you this morning that is not my approach. Right? And it is not my approach because Tucson is the only place where we do partisan elections. The rest of Arizona has figured this out. If we were having this conversation in any other community in this great state, this would be an issues conversation. It wouldn't be political. It wouldn't be partisan. But here we are in Tucson, Arizona, having those conversations. So I want to assure you, this comes as a pragmatic, nonpartisan citizen who is saying, look, we have nonpartisan issues to address. Potholes are not Republican or Democrat. Houses are not Republican or Democrat. Community safety should not be Republican or Democrat. Let's get to work. And I think we're seeing a stunning lack of urgency on those areas. Let me put the housing conversation into perspective really quick. I don't think I've shared these numbers before. I know I'm the housing guy. I roll my eyes at myself too, but I think this is important. It's the issue of the day. Listen to this. When we say housing that is attainable, we create a picture in our mind that is no longer correct. Let me give you some numbers. Retirees on fixed income need to bring in about $16,000, or they do bring about $16,000 a year, which means that according to the cost burden math, right, that 30% number, they can afford $415 a month in rent or to buy a house for $50,000 or less. Service industry workers make a minimum wage of about $27,000 a year. They can afford $690 in rent and a house that sells for less than $95. Are you getting the picture? Single parents with two children earn on average $56,000 a year. They can afford $1,420 a month for rent or a house that costs $190K. Family of four, making these are some Phoenix numbers, making the Valley's median household income of $79,000, can afford $1,975 a month in rent and to buy a $280,000 home. But get this, here's where we're at. The average rent for a one bedroom in Metro Phoenix is $1,400. One bedroom, average. We're gonna be there soon in Tucson, if not already. And the median house price is $410,000. So when you create a picture of what it means for whom housing is attainable, we're talking your nurses, your firefighters, your police officers, your servers, your waiters, your waitresses, your single parents, and yes, your family of four, making a median household income of $80,000, cannot afford to live in this state in many places. Here's another interesting number, and I'll share one more with you, and we'll move on here. There's a project up in Phoenix. By the way, if this on a social scale is uninteresting to you, that's okay. There's a money reason for this. There's an example of a North Phoenix neighborhood with 38 single family homes next to 79 townhomes on similar size parcels, multifamily, single family. The 38 houses, the single family, bring in a total of $170,000 in annual property taxes, which doesn't cover the municipality costs of maintaining the subdivision. And if you think that's a one-off, you're wrong. I mean, we can't pay for ourselves anymore in our American cities, certainly Arizona. The townhomes, again, same parcel size, bring in $320,000 in property taxes. And we know this math. This is not new math. This is not revelatory. We know that we have a need for housing, and we need it to be more dense because it pays for itself. We can't pay for how we build cities anymore. And yet here we are, fighting over lot sizes for a few hundred accessory dwelling units over the next few years. The city of Tucson is doing a housing plan, and I appreciate planning, but the city of Tempe just passed a plan where they are going to contribute 50% of permit fees from developers, right? So they're not asking anything of developers, but they're saying, look, the permit fees that get created by us developing in our community, 50% of that every time goes to developing affordable housing. They've, in a year, friends, in a year, raised $6 million, the city of Tempe, $6 million for affordable housing. The time to plan is done. Go build. Go do. Make something happen. There's a stunning lack of urgency. I thought in terms of a Monday morning news hour, I thought Councilmember Nikki Lee was on point at last week's study session from Mayor and Council when she said, look, with 7 days to spare, 8 days to spare, you're going to bring us a plan for replacing employees, especially public safety officers and first responders who leave because of the vaccine mandate. That's it. To how I view it, there's 8 days to say, okay, here's the plan. That decision was made without a plan. And there is a stunning lack of urgency in this community to figure out what happens, whether or not, wherever you land philosophically on the jab and mandates around it, there is a stunning lack of urgency to figure out what happens when we have public safety officers drop off the map in the city of Tucson. And there is a stunning lack of urgency around the fact that we are cruising towards a record that will be and take a long time to break in the city of Tucson. I've often asked this, and this is just an observation. Within a matter of weeks, Mayor Romero, early in 2020, set up a commission on gun safety and on guns in our community. And we know that a lot of the violence we're seeing is gun-related. But yet there's been silence across the board on the wave of crime that we are seeing. Whether or not it's a tough-on-crime solution or it's a gun ownership solution, I mean, let's hash that political debate out. But there's no debate to be had. There's a stunning lack of urgency. And of course, you know, I talk about the fact that we are 13 out of 13 of peer cities when it comes to establishment growth. 1.1% growth from last year of jobs and businesses created in the city of Tucson. We can't pay for these things unless we are developing a sustainable tax base through smart growth. And there's a stunning lack of urgency to talk about how do we grow our economic base. Things don't get better from here until those three pillars are taken care of. There's a stunning lack of urgency. And the time to get urgent about it was last week, right? And again, Monday morning news hour, numbers driven, news driven, a tough weekend for public safety again, a tough region for jobs, and a lack of urgency on the housing. Plan or no plan, planning is good, doing is better. And we don't have the political will to do, because both liberals and conservatives have an issue with what needs to be done. And we've got to come to the table and figure out, for people who don't want to see vertical growth and people who don't want to see horizontal growth, something's got to give, and someone's got to give something up, because we're heading in the wrong direction. That's the end of our Monday morning news hour. Tomorrow when we come back, 9 a.m., I'm looking forward to sitting down with Juan Ciscomani. He's a Republican running for Congress in what we now know as CD2. The map may change a tad, but he's running for Congress. We'll talk with him and lots more great conversation tomorrow. Zanswer@gmail.com. Shoot me an email. Hugh Hewitt's coming up next. Bill Buckmaster at noon, as always. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Monday morning news hour, Tipping Point, AM 1030 KVY The Voice. We'll be back Tuesday at 9. See you then, Tucson.